It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 354. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Some National League teams made some moves this week, and we've been talking a lot about the National League East, but we haven't been looking at the rest of the National League, really, and some of the teams that did not make the playoffs last year, other than the Phillies, have gotten better. So we're going to take a look at what we think are the top teams in the National League and where the Phillies fit in among all that, because not only do you have to compete with the division, you have to compete with some of the other teams in your league as well. Will the National League be welcoming the designated hitter in 2021, and is it a good thing? We'll talk about that, and we'll talk some prospects as well. You know, we don't get into the prospects knee-deep most of the time, but we've got some good stuff as the Baseball Prospectus Top 101 is out. Baseball America's Top 100 came out last week, so we'll get into all of that coming up here in the next few minutes, and joining me as they do every week is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how you feeling, pal?
John, did you know that the Pittsburgh Pirates payroll going into 2020 is now just a little over $43 million?
That's all. That sounds like a lot. $43 million? I wish I had $43 million. That's a lot of money.
You know who does have over $43 million? Is
who?
The Athletic, a subscription-based digital sports media company, which only in its latest round of fundraising raised $50 million,
oh,
which is, as you might know, almost $7 million more than the entire Pittsburgh Pirates payroll going into 2020.
So are we expecting a tweet from the Pittsburgh Pirates organization announcing that they've joined the Athletic? Is that what we're leading up to?
I'm not sure.
They could be acquired by the Athletic.
I'm not sure what else to expect out of Pittsburgh at this point.
Right. That's an abomination. How much did you say?
43.265 was the figure I saw.
What a joke. I mean, that's lower than the Marlins. That's less. They're spending less on their team than the Marlins this year.
The Marlins will be better than the Pirates and the Tigers and the Giants this year.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Very interesting. Boy, what's Pittsburgh? And we'll talk about why Pittsburgh's salary went down even more coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, got to also introduce Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz has had a trying day doing some reporting for Yahoo Sports with the sad news of Kobe Bryant over the weekend. Liz, have you recovered from your sad day of writing?
No, because I think before I go to bed, I have to add more to that.
Oh no!
That article that I wrote about the famous athletes who died in plane crashes.
Oh my goodness!
I was going for a theme, and they're like, "No, add these eight other things."
Other things. Jeez,
that is grim. That is awful.
Yeah, exciting, folks. This is a look behind the curtain of those of us
journalism,
who write for. You know, places like Yahoo Sports, the Bleacher Report. These are the things that we do. I'm happy to be talking.
Plane crash. Yeah.
Content.
I'm happy to be talking about baseball and not about Roy Halladay or Thurman Munson or Roberto Clemente tonight.
Yeah, and we were going to record on Sunday night, and after the Kobe news broke, we were kind of like, how do you talk about something else other than that? And, you know, the last thing we wanted to do is get into a conversation about all that. So, I mean, obviously, you know, we have heard a lot about Kobe Bryant over the last 24, 48 hours. But as a baseball podcast, we're going to kind of move on and talk about some other stuff and hopefully give you a diversion from the Kobe news and all the other stuff going on with that. And let's talk some National League here, guys, to jump off. And there were a couple of interesting acquisitions made this week with the Cincinnati Reds and the Arizona Diamondbacks. We'll start off with Cincinnati. They signed Nick Castellanos to a four-year deal with opt-outs after year one and year two. So this is a pretty player-friendly deal. Gives Castellanos some freedom to move someplace else. And the Reds have been super busy this offseason. They signed Castellanos. They signed Mike Moustakas. They signed the Japanese center fielder Akiyama. And they've signed Wade Miley. And this was a team that already was looking like that they were starting to kind of put things together a little bit last year. starting to get a little bit better. Liz, as someone who lives in Ohio, who goes to Reds games every once in a while, I've always really liked it when the Reds were good because it's such a great baseball city. What's your take on what Cincinnati's doing here so far this offseason?
It's certainly fascinating. They have a lot. They've just acquired a lot of guys. They have a lot of players. You know, they feel like the Phillies did a couple of years ago, where just like, we've got 8 possible pieces for every single position. Not all of them are good, but they're all there. They're just an interesting team. They'll be fun to watch. They've hired Kyle Body of Driveline to run their pitching, which I believe has attracted more pitchers to them. So I'm looking forward to see how, you know, to seeing how they're doing, how they'll, how are they going to fit all those guys in the outfield? They have a lot of outfielders. Like, they talked about trading. There was a rumor out that they were going to trade for Nick. They were going to trade Nick Senzel.
Yeah.
Which set off a conversation on Twitter about how crappy the 2016 draft was.
Yeah. And the Mickey Moniak draft. I mean, there's no one that came out of that first round that is any good, including Nick Senzel, who could be good, but he's had a lot of injuries. But if they're looking to deal him, it's not a promising start here, Justin. And with the Reds, listen to this opening day lineup right now. You've got Akiyama, and, you know, who knows how good this kid from Japan's going to be. But most of the time, these guys come over and they play pretty well. And he's going to start the season off in center field. Joey Votto at first base. Eugenio Suarez at third base, batting third. You got Castellanos in the 4 hole, Moustakas in the 5th hole, Aquino in the 6 hole, Senzel at 7, and Barnhart at catcher. You know, that's a pretty good lineup. And then you're looking at Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray, Trevor Bauer, Anthony DeSclafani, and Wade Miley as your starting rotation. Cincinnati could be, they could be some trouble this year.
Yeah, I every time I look at the Reds roster, there's somebody I forgot they added. This time it was Sonny Gray. I completely forgot that's where he was. And, you know, you look at some of these moves they've made this offseason. They aren't always the biggest moves. They arguably aren't the best moves, but they're always a significant move, it feels like. They grabbed Mike Moustakas pretty quick. He was one of the first moves of this offseason. And you can kind of see, like, with Moustakas, with Miley, they made some of the moves that, you know, you could argue the Phillies maybe should have made. And it was just kind of interesting to see a team be, you know, aggressive when the Phillies were like, okay, we did what we planned to do, and now we're comfortable sitting pat. And to see a team be so aggressive is fun. It is, you know, even though I would say that, like, I was looking at the numbers, and Joey Votto didn't have as terrible season as I thought, but he still had a pretty low season last year. And with him putting up like a lower numbers over a season than you want to see him do, I don't know if there's somebody who I feel like is like the guy in Cincinnati who makes this promise feel more validated. But like Liz said, they definitely have a lot of guys. And, you know, when you look at the depth chart, it's like, oh, Mike Moustakas is at second base. So I'm like, oh, right, I pictured him at third because that's where he would have been slotted in on the Phillies. But they have Eugenio Suarez. It's one of these moving pieces infields.
Yeah.
And it does. It makes them more interesting. And the Castellanos acquisition makes them even more interesting. And with Tucker Barnhart, who's like a good catcher, and, you know, our guy Freddie Galvis. You know, this is it, with Akiyama, like you said, this is a team that they made themselves really interesting, and they seem like they're pretty good at making themselves interesting. Interesting doesn't necessarily mean good,
right?
But you know, with the keys and the right ignitions, this is a team that could make a little bit of a noise in the NL Central. I think what some people aren't remembering is that just because some of these teams in the NL Central haven't done much, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily worse. They're still good teams here, even though they are, you know, going about things a little more head scratchingly than you'd think. But the Reds, if nothing else, got themselves a little closer and made themselves a little more interesting this offseason.
Yeah, I love this. I love the first five in the order here. Akiyama, Votto, Suarez, Castellanos, Moustakas. That is going to cause people problems. And the pitching was actually really good for them last year. I think Kyle Body's doing some good work with those pitchers. At least it seems as though he is. Luis Castillo bounced back from a terrible 2018 season. Sonny Gray also bounced back. He got out of New York and, you know, whatever New York was trying to do with him, obviously the Reds have switched around his pitch usage big time, and he found himself again. Trevor Bauer, for all the stuff that comes with, all the baggage that comes with him off the field, he is effective when he's on the mound. And I liked Wade Miley. Wade Miley was really good last year with the exception of September. And if he's your number five, I mean, my goodness, that's he'd be the Phillies probably number three starter at the moment if absolutely he were in Philadelphia. So and I'm looking at the Padres. The Padres have a good young team. They got Eric Hosmer at first, Jerickson Profar at second. They got Machado at third. Tatis Jr. could take the leap this year and really emerge as a superstar at shortstop. They got Tommy Pham in left field. Manuel Margot's kind of one of those guys who has a ton of talent. He's never put it all there all together just yet, but could be a big player. Will Myers in right field. Mejia at catcher. And their rotation leaves a little bit to be desired at the moment. But, you know, Chris Paddock's a good guy to have at the front of the rotation. Kirby Yates is a good closer. They signed Drew Pomeranz to a four-year deal. They signed Craig Stammen to a free agent deal. San Diego's going to be better this year, Justin.
Hey, there's a reason everybody lended some credibility to that fake Mookie Betts to the Padres trade rumor that went
around
today.
Yeah, that's floating out there, yeah.
There's a reason people believe that, and it's because the Padres are putting together a little bit of a team out there, and that would be an absolutely insane
taking
addition.
Them long enough.
That would be a baseball landscape shifting trade were that to go down. But yeah, I mean, I and this is what makes this part of what makes this offseason so engaging and entertaining is that teams like the Padres and Reds are making moves like this and getting better. And it's just sad that it's kind of being obscured by the fact that the good teams in baseball are being outed as cheaters, whereas these teams that have not been very competitive are like, well, we're trying to acquire these players and nobody gives a oh, sorry.
that's the right idea, though. They really don't. And so, Liz, with the Padres, I mean, obviously Machado had a disappointing season there last year. Do you see him bouncing back, or do you see Machado kind of doing what he did last year moving forward with San Diego?
I don't see why we shouldn't expect Machado to bounce back a little bit. I mean, I think there was a shock of playing in that, you know, in that stadium for the first time because it's one of the more cavernous parks you'll find. But you can't, you know, Machado has talent. You can't just discount that. You need to see more than one down year before you assume that he's just not worth it. You know, if he does better, this team, I mean, they really have been telling us how long that they've been rebuilding for it feels like a decade.
Yeah, when was the last time the Padres went to the playoffs? I got to look that up.
I mean, that's a pretty long time.
Yeah. And it goes to show you how you can lose an entire generation without the, you know, without the right development, without the right management. And, you know, Darren Ruff is back in back stateside.
Darren!
Was that a minor league deal with the Giants he signed?
Minor league deal.
It's a very, very 2020 Giants deal. And, you know, where I'm looking at him for the next episode of The Dirty Inning. And in, like, looking at that, you know, history from less than 10 years ago, you just look at this generation of players for the Phillies that people were like, is this the future? And like, no one really, it was like, oh, okay. You know, Darren Ruff, he chased the Eastern League Triple Crown, and Freddie Galvis is this defensive wizard. And, you know, Ethan Martin, we acquired in a trade, and Jesse Biddle was this top draft pick. And everyone was like, okay, you know, this is the future. But everyone, I don't know. It just seemed, you never find someone who's just definitively saying these guys, this is it, you know, Rollins and yeah, they're all moving on and via trade and everything. The core is being shipped out and this new generation is here, and it's just an entirely lost generation looking back. Like, it is, the Phillies did not successfully rebuild for a variety of reasons, and that group of guys who still get coverage, like when he came back and signed that deal with the Giants, you better believe Phillies people were talking about it. Like, part of that is because that's the only other team he's played for in Major League Baseball, but it's also because, you know, that was, he may not have played, you know, over 106 games in a season for the Phillies, even more than once. They obviously never went to the playoffs with him, but it's still like, you know, this is a guy we recognize because this is from a lost cycle of Phillies rebuilding. Yeah. And I think you can go through that pretty easily. And the Padres know that. They've been doing it for 10 years. I mean, again, you can't just fault this to like bad luck, but like it sucks. Time goes by quick. You can lose a lot of time and a lot of fans when you don't do this effectively and quickly.
I believe the Padres had like a reset in the middle too, like they were rebuilding and then I think fired their GM and changed a lot of things out. So like you look at everything that came before that as sort of entirely lost. Like none of this, like this is barely building time because now the new regime has to start over and apply everything all over again.
I'm looking at their recent history, and the last time they won a playoff series was in their World Series season of 1998.
Holy.
Love.
The last time they made the playoffs was 2006. They went to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons in 05 and 06, but they won 82 games. And they went 82-80 in 2005 to win the division, and they went 88-74 in 2006. The only time they've won 90 games, at least 90 games, since 1998 was in 2010 when they went 90-72 and didn't make the playoffs. So,
man,
it's been a rocky road for San Diego here. They did have a 90. I mean, that 90-72 season in 2010. That's a pretty good year. They finished two games out of the wild card that year.
This is slightly off topic, but we've been talking about the Padres, and all I can think of are the Angels, and it's like they're the mirror image, the American League mirror image of the Padres, and that they've been trying to arrive for so long. It's just all hopeless. It's just so many hopeless years of nothing.
It's amazing. Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
Well, the Angels just never seem like they are trying. I don't know why. They don't give you that impression that they're like able, that's really their priority. And in the case of Anaheim, it's like, yeah, we all know all the talent circulates one guy in Anaheim, and for good reason, in Mike Trout. And I'm just going through these rosters of these teams, these Padres teams that we're talking about, John, and I just... Who is the guy, like, of the past like 10 years, I mean, that they've missed the playoffs? They just haven't had a guy to even pin your hopes to. Like, maybe there's been a few people they've brought up and been like, oh, they acquired like Will Myers when he was one of the top Rays guys. And it was just like, oh, yeah, okay, we got another guy. And now they've got Manny. But like, yeah, there was just nobody to even pin your hopes. At least the Angels can like sell merchandise with Trout's name.
Yeah, that's true. And they've got Trout, and now they've got Ohtani. There's just...
Yeah.
The thing about the Angels is that they've spent money. They've just spent it horribly, like the Albert Pujols deal, the Josh Hamilton deal.
Oh, man.
I mean, they've tried to go after big pitchers, but haven't been able to land any of them, which is interesting. I mean,
Jared Weaver is a name that everyone knows as part of the Angels because he was pitched for them for most of his career, I think.
It was the first one to pop in my head when we were talking Angels pitchers.
Pitcher,
I'm like, Jared Weaver.
That's all
I got.
That's
right.
Ohtani,
depressing.
I guess.
Like, no disrespect to Jared Weaver, but that's depressing.
Well, we'll see if Ohtani even pitches this year. I mean, I think they plan to have him do it, but you know, he's coming off that Tommy John, so we'll see. The other National League team I wanted to talk about was the Diamondbacks. They're the ones who traded for Starling Marte to be their starting center fielder, and so now their lineup looks something like this. They have Starling Marte, Ketel Marte, who was like the third or fourth best player in the National League last year, according to WAR. He was amazing. You have Eduardo Escobar, who's a great power-hitting third baseman, David Peralta, who always kills the Phillies in left field, Christian Walker at first base, Cole Calhoun in right field, Nick Ahmed at shortstop, Carson Kelly at catcher. I don't love that lineup after Peralta. I don't know much about Christian Walker at first base. Maybe he's good. So the lineup is a little top-heavy there, but the pitching could be good. They have Madison Bumgarner, who they signed to a free agent deal, Mike Leake, Robbie Ray, Zach Gallen and Luke Weaver. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know that the Diamondbacks like the Reds. I don't know if they're going to be good, Liz, but the Diamondbacks are making moves. I mean, trading for Starling Marte, signing Madison Bumgarner to be your number one starter. It's their moves. I mean, they're making moves. They're definitely going to be tougher than they were last year, I would think.
I mean, they're another one of those what are they doing teams, like even more than the Reds, because the Reds at least have a progression. There's a definite downward, you know, trajectory and then an upward progression to what they're doing. The Diamondbacks have looked like they were trying to rebuild like four times in the last 3 years or so. Like, there have been so many, like, they trade away big talent and then sign other guys. Like, I guess that's kind of what you're supposed to do. Like, we look at some of these moves, like trading Mookie Betts does seem crazy, but this is what teams do. You're supposed to trade people.
Yeah.
You know, so I admire them for sort of going for it. I just wish I saw what they were going for. Like, it doesn't seem like there's a plan. Doesn't seem like there's an overall plan to what they're doing. They're just kind of going from moment to moment, like looking at what they can do and add right now, which will be different than 5 minutes from now.
I got to tell you, Liz, I think it was earlier in this offseason, maybe even during the regular season, And John and I were saying this exact same thing. I feel like it was even about the Diamondbacks. Maybe it was about their rumored interest in Bumgarner or something. And we were saying, what were they doing and everything? And you were the one who told us. You were like, hey, what they're doing is trying to win. What they're doing is trying to be interesting.
Yeah.
You had the answer. So, yeah. I mean, if that's what they're doing, then, like, yeah, this is a rarity on the major league level as far as teams go. I mean, either that or there's a dangerous shortage of talent that we're all not acknowledging. But, like, it seems like this is what I mean when I say it's sad that this stuff's getting obscured in the middle of the off season. But when the regular season comes and the Reds are hopefully more competitive and the Diamondbacks are a little more interesting in divisions that have been really tough for those teams specifically in the past couple of years. Yeah, hopefully they're as interesting as they think they've made themselves, because I think that's all they can say that they are doing right now. They're not going for the best players. Like, the Diamondbacks and Reds were never in on Garrett Cole, as far as I know. You know, like, they weren't ever doing that. But, like, they seem to think, well, we're these lower to mid market teams, and these are the free agents that are appropriate for us. Like, when the Marlins announced they were interested in signing free agents, and they were like, what kind of free agents are you interested in signing? And they were like, well, we're in the Cole Calhoun, Corey Dickerson, Yasiel Puig frame of free agents. Those are our targets. And you're like, okay, now we know.
I am struck, though, just at the difference in this offseason from the last two off seasons, with the aggressiveness in salaries for free agents, and in some of these mid-market teams that maybe, you know, they're not adding pieces that are going to make them World Series cinches, but adding pieces to really help them try and compete. And it's so different than the last 2 years. And if there was collusion over the last 2 years, why? I'm just so curious why things are different this offseason. Is it the impending CBA? Is it just teams have been... I mean, I really don't have any explanation. And I've asked other baseball writers and experts and stuff who I've had on if they can explain it. Nobody really seems to know why teams are behaving so differently this offseason. Do either of you guys have a thought?
I think it's a combination of factors. I think the arrival of the CBA could certainly be part of it. I also think it's the overall quality of what we're seeing, because the guys on the free agent market this year were much different than last year. Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, for all the hype around them, did have, you know, they weren't, at least Harper was dealing with a down year. I think there was a lot of reluctance to go in as big because people look at hitters and pitchers a lot differently. They look at Garrett Cole and everything he's been doing, and I think there's a lot more confidence that he'll be able to continue at that level for a while people have a harder time feeling that way with hitters. That's just me. I think you, but if you look at the free agents from market to market, I think you have to look at the concentration of sort of where they're located and the overall perception. Because I'd love to chalk it up to just one thing, but every market's different.
Well, that's very true. And I mean, every market is different. And I guess, Justin, one of the other things that you look at here with these teams is that, you know, maybe you're seeing some perceived weaknesses in some of the teams that maybe people thought were untouchables. I mean, maybe do the Padres and the Diamondbacks see the Dodgers as being a little bit vulnerable? Do the Reds see the Cardinals and Cubs as being a little bit more vulnerable? Because these big teams like the Cubs and the Dodgers, you know, and even the Nationals to a degree, they re-signed Steven Strasburg, but they haven't made their team. I don't think the Nationals are better than they were last year. I think the Nationals are a little worse than they were last year at this point. They've subtracted Anthony Rendon and tried to add little pieces. But some of these big contenders have done nothing or lost a piece or two, while the lower tier teams have improved and maybe see an opening. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I think it'd be hard not to look up especially in the NL Central and see what what's coming out of the Cubs organization right now and not think like, maybe now's the time to be, you know, a little more effective in the NL Central. But like you say, the Dodgers, do they sense a vulnerability in the Dodgers? I mean, I can't think as to why, except another year has gone by off the top of my head. But that just, you know, reminds me of what happened in, was it the last Phillies season? And the whole infamous now, you know, why make the playoffs if you're just going to have to play the Dodgers argument? And that kind of goes back to these teams are making themselves better so that they will be better. And if they can't make themselves better with the highest talent available, then they're finding a way to do it with the talent that they can afford or that they're choosing to afford. And, you know, I'm not one to award a bunch of goodwill points to giant billion-dollar franchises that definitely aren't, you know, they're not getting the benefit of the doubt that their belief is in the heart and soul of baseball and making it fun by signing all the Nick Castellanoses out there. But I do get a certain thrill in the idea that, like, they're trying to compete with the Dodgers because it's kind of their job to do that. they are another NL West team, and at least unless they just want to be roadkill under the Dodgers, you know, the wheels of the Dodgers war machine all summer, then you got to make yourself a little better. So it's cool that they've done that. I can't say that they are going to be, you know, intensely more effective, but If that's the fundamental principles they're using when assembling a team that's even a little better, then, you know, good. Because you can't just wait for the dynasties to fall. You can't just wait for the Cubs to crumble or the Dodgers to lose gas. You have to, like, take advantage of the situation beyond that, because you can't really control what these other teams are doing. I mean, I guess if you're maybe there's like a tech bro assistant GM listening to this who's laughing at that. Of course I can. I just hit a few of these buttons and pull this lever and I can completely control what our rivals are doing. But, you know, as far as I know, you got to just build the best team you can. And yeah. If you're the Diamondbacks and you're the Reds and you don't think you're going to be the worst team and you don't think you're better off just losing a bunch of games, then, you know, these moves aren't crazy. And it's kind of funny that we're talking about them as if they're novelties.
Yeah, well, and you just said it. If we're not, you know, how did you just phrase it? It just flew right out of my head. But my point was that, you know, if it's not working, like the teams that have gone on full rebuilds, the attendance that they lose while doing that, and the lack of certainty that it's actually going to pay off for you, I think teams are realizing, you know, it's not worth it. Maybe it's. I mean, look at the Phillies. I mean, the Phillies went on full rebuild and. What did they really get out of it? You know, none of the moves that they made, they got payroll flexibility. That was what the rebuild did, because they didn't bring in a ton of young talent that they were able to make part of their next great team. It was all about shedding all of the payroll so that they could go out and add the Bryce Harpers and the Andrew McCutchens and all that. You know, the guys who are the young players from this team are the guys that they drafted: Aaron Nola, Scott Kingery, Rhys Hoskins. It's not Nick Williams, you know. It's not Jared Eichhoff. It's not Vince Velasquez, unless, you know, Velasquez shocks us all this year. So when, you know, that's what's interesting. I think maybe teams are starting to take a look at the rebuild model, the full teardown model, and say to themselves, you know, it's really hard to build a good baseball team from scratch. The Astros and the Cubs did it, but maybe those are the outliers, and, you know, maybe we shouldn't go about doing it that way. But
and it takes forever. I mean, this
it
isn't
takes forever.
It takes a lot longer than it takes in other sports. And I mean, who was it? I can't remember who it was. It was either Al Avila with the Tigers, Jerry DePoto in Seattle. So one of these GMs of a team that's, you know, quote unquote rebuilding, literally said the phrase "trust the process" the other day, and it was like labeled as an infamous phrase. And I don't know, maybe the Sixers ran with that with from somebody else, but like that means something else in baseball, because in baseball the process is longer and nowhere near as I feel like guaranteed that it's going to pay off. There feels like there's a lot more moving parts to this, and it's like you just said, Jai, it's like we were saying at the beginning of the podcast, the Phillies have one, maybe two, maybe just one and a half lost generations of prospects, that just guys they brought up, hopefully these are the guys, whoops, they're not, okay, see you in 5 years. I mean, that's a tough thing to bite off as a fan. That's a whole bunch of kids that aren't going to be fans because there's other more interesting things to do. I would rather play Fortnite than watch Darren Ruff strike out three times in a baseball game, of course. So yeah, it is nice to see that, because I think baseball has proven, if nothing else, no, it has proven many things. We don't need to say if nothing else, but one of the things baseball has proven in like the past 5-10 years is that, yeah, I agree. The Cubs and the Astros are probably more outliers, and yeah, it's a tantalizing prospect to think, okay, well, we can do that, or we can do our version of that, or we can improve on the ways that they didn't do that perfectly. But at the end of the day, it's much more likely you're going to wind up being the Phillies or the Padres in that situation.
Well, up next, we're going to try and determine the who the top let's try the top 12 teams in the National League right now. We'll do one of our fun little snake drafts, and we'll get into the National League getting the DH soon. Possibly could be happening. We'll tackle that next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So we just talked a little bit about the Padres, Diamondbacks, and Reds, and kind of how the rest of the National League is shaping up. And one of the fun things we can do here with this, and, you know, I guess maybe I'm playing fast and loose with the word fun here, but one of the things we can do here is do a little snake draft of 12 NL National League teams. And we're doing 12 because there's three of us, and we do four rounds. Simple multiplication tells us we're going to do 12 teams here. So that's going to leave three National League teams out of the running. But this, I thought, you know, I'm looking at all these teams, and I'm having an almost impossible time trying to rank from best to worst to, I think, you know, how this is going to go here this year. So let's do this. Let's do a snake draft of all 12 NL teams and, you know, go from who we think is best to worst. I'll start out, and I'm not going to do crumpling up paper and putting it in the candy dish or anything like that, because I think that got annoying the second time. So we'll just I'll just start, and then Justin, why don't you go second, and Liz, you can go third.
Sure. Sounds fair.
Yeah, it's not fair at all. I just decided that's what we're going to do, but you know, that's you know, everybody gets a turn. I'll start with the Nationals. I mean, I don't know, you know, that their offseason has been great, but they did bring back Strasburg. Do I think they're going to win the World Series again? I don't. So, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't go with the Nationals.
You just talked yourself right out of it, man.
I did. I talked myself right on out of it. Yeah, I'm going to talk myself out of it. Give me the Dodgers. I'm taking the Dodgers.
I'm sorry. I know we're not sticking to the rules of
the Is that wrong? I have to go with Nationals? All right.
But come on.
All right, all right, all right. I'll go with the Nationals.
A modicum of decency, sir.
I'm going to explain my reasoning why I picked them, and then I'm going to explain why I'm not picking them.
Wait a second. This was a terrible decision. I'm going to do something else.
This is how my fantasy football drafts go. I immediately hate the pick after making it. So, all right, I'm gone. I'll take the Nationals at number one. Justin, who's number two?
I'll take the Dodgers. for, you know, obvious reasons. Cody Bellinger rules. You know, I feels like they've been good forever, and it still feels like they have 100 players on their 25-man roster. Yeah, there's a reckoning coming in the NL West, but it's tough not to like the Dodgers right now.
I think in my heart I feel like it's all going to come crashing down this year, and maybe I'm completely wrong about that, but I just feel like their souls were crushed last year by the
sure.
Nationals.
Oh, I think it's totally plausible, but yeah. I think there's enough young talent that it's still, you know, that some of these guys are still in their prime or entering their primes. Gavin Lux just got here.
And he's the 2016 draft. He's almost certainly the best player out of that draft, and he's barely hit the majors.
He's 22 years old, so yeah, there's still some life for the Dodgers, I would say.
All right, fine. All right, Dodgers at number two. Liz, who do you have at number three and four?
I'm picking the Braves because I hate them, and they're so good, and they're going to be good this year again. They're going to make me hate them, and they also have Cole Hamels, and I hate them.
And Felix Hernandez.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
which is like not as big a thing, but I just keep saying that. I'm like, they could have Cole Hamels and Felix Hernandez in their rotation this year as like spare parts.
Yep.
Like, they also have Freddie Freeman, who
is still good. It's just always good.
Yeah. He's just an unbelievable. He's you want to talk about generational talent? I mean, we're past that point. Freddie Freeman's going to be mentioned in, you know, wrap ups of whatever the past decade, the past era. I mean, he's probably going to be like the Freddie Freeman era of Braves baseball. It sucks to play against him as much as the Phillies do.
Yeah, no one
the
talks
Ron Acuna,
about him.
Nobody, because he gets overshadowed by Acuna. He really does.
Well, he gets overshadowed by everybody. He's never been the flashiest. He's just been very, you know, he's been very steady at a high level. He's sort of like, he's a Mike Troutish figure, and that he just sort of is fine with doing his thing. Which is great. He could be good. I'd rather him and the Braves be bad, but otherwise I wouldn't be picking them third. So.
Yep. All right. Well, you got the Braves at three. Who do you have at four, Liz?
I will take the Cardinals.
The Cardinals.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
All right. Justin, who do you have at five?
I'm gonna go with the Yankees. I'll leave the S.
Wait. We're doing nationally. Buddy.
Oh, we're doing.
You think I voluntarily picked the Cardinals because I was.
Why do you think I said interesting?
Yeah.
It's just like, why would I? Yeah, the Cardinals. I didn't explain it, but I actually think they could probably beat the Brewers. That's gonna be a really interesting division.
No,
it really will be. Yeah.
I agree. I think the Brewers. You want to talk about a team that's ready to be slapped down? Oh, I think the Brewers might.
I think their luck's running out. Yeah. What's that stadium name changes?
Yeah. So now looking at the rest of these standings, the NL East doesn't leave a whole lot to be. You just kind of feel like there's got to be something better out there this early in the draft. But like I said, I'm not too wild about the Brewers right now. I don't hate the Cubs. I feel like they took a downswing last year that probably isn't their complete end. I feel like there's still some life in the Cubs. And, of course, we just talked for the first 15 minutes about how much we like the things the Reds have done to make themselves more interesting. But I'm gonna go with the Diamondbacks, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I feel like they did enough things interestingly. And I feel like, I feel like they made themselves better enough that they're going to be a really, they're going to make the NL West a little more interesting, certainly more so than it was, this past year.
Hmm. Wow. So you've got the Diamondbacks ahead of the Cubs and the Phillies and the Mets here. Interesting. Very, very interesting. So now I'm torn. Do I go with the Mets here? I mean, do I go with the Phillies here at number six? Do I think they're the sixth best team in the National League? And do I think they're better than the Mets at this point? I keep forgetting the Mets won 86 games last year. I mean, a lot of that was they passed the Phillies late in the season. And so as the Phillies were crashing and burning, the Mets kind of got hot towards the end of the season where they were crashing and burning for most of it. And I just don't know what to make of the Cubs anymore. You know, you wonder if their heart's in it because of the way they've been talking. You know, I don't
not.
Think
their
it is.
Their owner's heart is not in it. He does not want to spend money. He has made it clear. His fans hate him. The goodwill from the World Series lasted 3 years.
It's incredible that lasted so short. And John, I gotta say, your inquisitive, higher pitched tone to my selection of the Diamondbacks. I'm now wondering who you would have picked with that pick as you don't know what to make of the Cubs. You're not sure about the Mets and Philly. Who would you have picked?
Yeah, I agree with you about the Brewers. I think the end is coming here for them. But I will take. I'm gonna take the Cubs. I think you know I probably would have put the Cubs ahead of the Diamondbacks, just because they still have talent on that team.
Yeah,
they are still really scary.
They have more talent than the Diamondbacks. That's a fair assessment.
John Lester was still really good last year. Yu Darvish had a phenomenal second half for them last year.
Which makes me really happy. The baseball is better when he is good.
Yeah. So I'm gonna take the Cubs at six, and I'll put the Phillies at number seven. You know, and that's, man, for a $200 million payroll to think that they're made like the seventh best team in the National League is,
I mean, you said six.
I'd put the Brewers in front of them too. You didn't pick them, but I would.
No, I didn't.
You said six. Then I kind of thought I could see the Phillies being I feel like that's a fair assessment. Sixth would have been fair, I think, for the Phillies.
Yeah.
I think some things are going to break for the Phillies this year that didn't break last year. Yeah. Not human bones, but like luck and stuff. I think that'll break for the Phillies more so this year. That honestly would be enough of a swing to put them near the top five, not in it, but near it.
Yeah, I'd probably have the Phillies ahead of the Diamondbacks too. So I guess the Phillies are probably in my six, my top six as well. But on our list, they are at number seven. So Justin, who do you have here with your third pick, number eight overall? This
sucks.
Make their money.
I guess I'm looking at the. I guess I gotta pick the Brewers after making all that noise about them. But I like them more than the Mets. I do like them more than the Mets, and the Reds are fun, but I'm a little wary, you know, to make a. Again, it feels early, but I guess it's not. I'm gonna go with the Brewers because after the Dodgers and Diamondbacks, the NL West doesn't have a lot to look at.
Unless you count the Padres.
I guess you count the Padres. Believer. You're right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, who knows? Liz, what do you have at 9?
I'll pick the Mets because I can't possibly pick the Reds over the Mets because the Mets are an intentionally built team, I think. Sort of. They have a lot of pieces that, taken together, could be good. I think that's kind of the definition of a baseball team. But it feels like a step forward for the Mets, in a way, now that they're on their second manager of the offseason. How did they manage to screw this up?
Well, I saw something interesting. Keith Law tweeted about when the Mets hired, what's his name, Felipe Alou's son. I'm just totally blanking. Rojas? Yeah. Luis Rojas. When they hired him, like the Mets may have accidentally hired a competent manager. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of might have stumbled into somebody who, a qualified manager, is what he was talking about.
He almost certainly should have gotten the job the first time around because Beltran has never managed, but really wants to manage. He's got that celebrity that the Wilpons love. Like, Rojas has been in the Mets system. He's been managing in the minors since 2011.
Oh, yeah, long time.
You know, he's been doing this for almost a decade before he came up to be the quality control coach. And he was, like, players raved about his ability to translate analytics into language they can understand. So they might have accidentally done something good. And that's one of the only ways I think the Mets can do something truly good is almost by accident. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I might have just stumbled into it for sure.
Yeah, I can't pick the Reds over them because the Mets are like, they've got a competent team in there somewhere.
Right. Well, at number 10, do you take the Reds now?
Yes, now I take the Reds because there's like the Padres, Rockies, and Pirates left, which no.
Yeah, yeah. So
don't forget the Marlins.
Oh, God.
I'll take the Padres. I feel like I didn't do great. I feel like I got the Dodgers, and then that's kind of might be it. I don't know how I always do this. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a team. I'm gonna go, and I'll go with the Rockies here, obviously with number 12 overall. So here's how our teams shake out. I have the Nationals, Cubs, Phillies, and Rockies. Justin has the Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Brewers, Padres. Liz finishes with the Braves, Cardinals, Mets, and Reds.
Damn, I did really good.
I was gonna say I think Liz has the best team.
How'd that happen? Yeah. Team.
But here's the order. So we have it as Nationals, Dodgers, Braves, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, Cubs, Phillies, Brewers, Mets, Reds, Padres, and Rockies. So for all the moves, the Reds and the you know, what's kind of funny is when, as we were talking in the first segment about the Reds and the Padres and the Diamondbacks, I thought I liked the Reds and the Padres teams better than the Diamondbacks team. Is it just kind of my preference looking at the lineups and looking at the rosters? But you know, as we go through this, the Diamondbacks at 5 and the Reds at 10, and the Padres at 11. Just interesting stuff. I don't know what to say about it.
I don't know if that's an accurate portrayal of the talent level in the National League, but yeah.
That's why doing it the way we did it.
You know, when the clock starts ticking, you lose control and you just forget everything.
You pass over Aaron Rodgers in the first round. That's what you do.
You know, it's something we talked about on an earlier podcast. It's like, yeah, I can talk about how the Phillies are going to be better all season long, but the fact of the matter is, the last two seasons are the freshest versions of the Phillies in my head. And so it's like, oh yeah, I believe that, you know, with the right luck and they acquired this talent and, you know, the Zach Wheeler and it's, you know, Didi Gregory, whatever. Bryce Harper has a great season. Fine. But like in your head, the last two Phillies teams are these teams that, you know, S'd the bed on their way to the end of the regular season and didn't make the playoffs. And you're just like, yeah, but if I got to pick them, I don't want to pick them because I don't trust them.
Yep. We know our team better than anyone else.
Right. And that's much. I mean, the same goes for like the Reds and Padres. It's like, oh yeah, I like that team. I like how that's set up. I don't buy for a second that they'll win even a single game in 2020.
When we come back, we'll tackle some of these prospect lists and just ask a couple of quick questions about them before we finish up. So that'll be up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So as we're kind of in this little bit of a dead zone here in the Major League Baseball offseason, especially for the Phillies, this is the time of year when the prospect lists, generally speaking, come out. And Baseball America announced their top 100 last week. I talked a little bit about that on last week's podcast. Baseball Prospectus's top 101 list came out this week. There were two Phillies in the top 101. Spencer Howard at number 36 and Alec Bohm at number 40.
Brutal.
So that we'll talk about that in just a second. MLB Pipelines list has Bohm at 30, Howard at 34, and Bryson Stott at number 87. So they have three Phillies in their top 100. Kind of looking at the number of, you know, how these different teams have done with prospects in the top 100 or so, San Diego has seven top 101 prospects, according to Baseball Prospectus. The Braves, Dodgers, and Rays each have six. Oh. The Marlins have five. And then a number of teams have four. Yeah, the Braves with six is really distressing.
And the Dodgers, yeah.
These are
like that's
farm
yeah.
systems that are...
That's exactly what you don't want to see.
Yep, nope. And, you know, so it's the Phillies are not in a great spot as far as having high-end talent. They have, but they do have two guys who, you know, they're going to play in 2020. Barring a disaster, Spencer Howard and Alec Bohm are going to be on this team in 2020, probably by late June, early July. And so... That's good. The Phillies, you need that. And, you know, maybe some other guys take some steps forward here, but none of us are quote unquote prospect people. You know, I mean, we know enough about these guys to talk about them a little bit, to get excited about them. But, you know, we bring on prospect guests to kind of help us navigate, you know, all these guys in the minor leagues who we don't get to take a look at closely.
We make the prospect people at the Good Fight angry.
Right. Exactly. So, I guess, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, as we look at Howard, as we look at Bohm, how confident can we be that these guys are going to turn around? And I guess the best way to look at to produce at the major league level, and I guess the best way to ask this is, Liz, and I'll start with you. Who's the last Phillies prospect you saw and you were like, you felt really sure that this guy's going to be really good?
I don't want to answer those because it's sad. Because how many of these guys are actually turned out?
Yeah.
I mean, my last one was J.P. Crawford. J.P. Crawford broke my heart. Not even Dominic Brown broke my heart, because he at least came up and produced.
Okay, well, just say one name so that you don't steal
I thought about this for a while today, because I was going back and forth, but it's J.P. Crawford. He was highly feted. He was moved up very quickly because everyone was confident in him, and then it all just stopped.
Yeah, and he straight up stinks. At the big league level.
That. It hurts.
Defensively, he's good, but his career batting average. His career numbers in the big leagues. He's got 165 games under his belt. Has a career 222 average, 320 on base, 367 slugging percentage. It's hard to comprehend given how promising he was coming up. I mean, that's that. I think, you know. Well, Justin, give me your answer.
So, I guess 10 years ago, between 9 and 10 years ago, I was walking in Fairmount. I was hanging out in Fairmount neighborhood in Philadelphia with a friend of mine from the Temple Film Department, and we wound up in Urban Saloon, which is not my favorite bar in Philly. It's a good spot for like trivia, you know, if you're trying to chance upon a lady, it's a good place to meet.
All right, Sherlock.
Wow.
And you go in there, and we got a table, and the Phillies game was on, and I kind of remembered that this was the Phillies were finally calling up Dominic Brown and putting him in the lineup. And I mean, there's very few actual player debuts that I can recall off the top of my head, but I can see very clearly he comes up. I'm not sure. I guess it wouldn't have been the first inning, but his first at bat was they were playing the Diamondbacks in Philadelphia. And I think there was a guy on second because he crushed this ball in his first big league at bat. Went all the way to the fence. They thought it was gone, but it hit the top, and he just got a double out of it. So you got to see him, as Chris Wheeler said on the broadcast. He's like, "Oh, now we get to see him run." And he turned on the high gears, and he was just taking these long strides and just gliding from first to second. Went in head first, whole place went crazy, knocked in a run in his first at bat. And I mean, this was an era of Phillies baseball built on success after success. 2007, nobody wanted to trust this team because the games they always blew in April were the games they could have won the division by in August and September. But in 2007, they finally got our trust back. They pushed through, and then they just built on that with the World Series and getting to the playoffs year after year. And then it just made sense. It was like, yeah, Jason Wirth's going to be gone, and our best prospect is this outfielder who can take his position. I mean, this is how baseball's supposed to work. This is the system working the way it's supposed to work. And he comes up and he does that. And it was just like, great, we're set. We got him. He's definitely working out. And, you know, I don't have to tell you the rest of the story here. Like, it was just a bizarre, sucky series of events, a loss of talent, mismanagement by the team. Call it what you will, it was just about everything. And it was just a multifaceted disaster that ended Dom Brown Philly's career. And now I think he's giving hitting lessons to other baseball players. Like, that to me set the bar. And every whirring blender of prospects that has come up for the Phillies, you know, that was supposed to be, oh, maybe this guy's the answer, has not been rated as high and fallen as low as poor Dominic Brown.
I think for me, and if I'm asking the prospect I thought would be a sure thing, I had doubts about, as much as I talked up J.P. Crawford, as much as I yelled at the Phillies for not playing J.P. Crawford more, for keeping him down in the minors, and as much as it was more of a want to believe that J.P. Crawford would live up to his preseason prospect rankings, you know, his status as by far and away the team's best prospect. The minor league numbers always concern me. I tried to not make it so, but as I look back, I don't think I ever really was sure that J.P. Crawford would hit the way he needed to hit. And now he's going to be 25 this year. I mean, still a young guy, but I mean, that's what we kept saying year after year with J.P. Crawford. He's still young for the league. He's still younger than most of the pitchers he's faced. He's still this, he's still that. And it comes to a point where you just think, okay, that's who this guy is. And I think as I think about all the Phillies prospects, you know, in recent years, I think I've always had some doubt about all of them. Like with Dominic Brown, I think I felt mostly confident, but you know, once he hurt his wrist in was it spring training or something, I forget exactly, but once he hurt himself,
who cares?
Yeah, I just who gives a crap. I think the guy that I was sure about, the last guy I was sure about, was Aaron Nola, and that actually worked out because he had a long track record in college, because he seemed like he was major league ready almost from the draft. I think that's a guy when he was in the minors, and he was only there a short time, obviously, that I thought, I really think this guy's going to be a really good pitcher. And I really felt confident about it. But like with Rhys Hoskins, Rhys Hoskins wasn't ever like a top 100 prospect, and you never knew, he never had the pedigree of somebody that you thought was going to be a superstar. Mm-hmm. Kingery, I mean, there's always been questions about his size. Always liked him, but never thought it was a sure thing that Kingery was going to be good. So I guess, you know, it's probably for me Aaron Nola, the last guy I was sure would be a good player, and that's one of the few that have worked out. Because as I think back on my J.P. Crawford, I think I talked a lot of tough talk about J.P.
I think, is it fair to say Aaron Nola's the last Phillies prospect to really work out in as big a way as you wanted? Yeah. Yeah, John, I really like that twist ending of it actually being good news.
Yeah.
Really a departure.
I thought that would be nice. I thought you'd like that. Yeah.
I hate that I can't think about prospects without thinking. I mean, prospects will break your heart is the thing people say for a reason. I can't think about prospects without thinking about the failures, because there have been so few successes. And that's depressing to me.
It is, and that's the question the Phillies have to try and figure out, is, are they drafting the wrong guys or are they developing wrong? And, you know, it's kind of a chicken or the egg kind of thing, and nobody seems to know the answer. We could sit here and talk about it, but nobody knows. Nobody really seems to have any idea, you know, if it's the Phillies' issue or if it's the players' issue or whatever. And, you know, drafting baseball players, especially high school players, is really, really hard. And some of these July 2nd guys that they get from international signings are 16 and 17 years old, so Nobody knows even what they're going to be 2 years after that, rather than as opposed to 6 years from that when they could be in the big league. So you just wish that they could develop an Acuna or an Albies, or, you know, that a Cody Bellinger or a Corey Seager or a Trey Turner, something like that. You just kind of hope that Hoskins figures it out, or Kingery figures it out, or Alec Bohm is the guy that you think. But I don't think either of us are certain about Bohm or certain about Howard, right? I mean, and if Sixto Sanchez was here, I don't think any of us would feel certain about Sixto Sanchez at this point, would we?
For all the reasons we were just describing.
Right.
No.
Right.
I admire getting to feel that way about a prospect, because it means you believe players like Aaron Nola are possible more often than they have been for the Phillies, and I want that to be the case. But, you know, he's out there, guys. Maybe he's not born yet, but the Phillies next, the Phillies Ronald Acuna equivalent is out there. They'll get him eventually. We'll be long in the grave by then, but they'll get him.
One day deep into the future. That's right. Well, listen, let's wrap up episode number 354 of the podcast. Is that what I said? Yeah, I think that's what it is. 354 of Hitting Season. Liz, any final thoughts from you before we wrap up?
No. I wish I had more to think about other than the sadness of J.P. Crawford and the general tenor of my day, but I don't.
Yeah, you really ruined her night, John.
Thanks. No, doing this podcast has uplifted my spirit, so thank you both. I'm serious. I mean, the J.P. Crawford stuff notwithstanding.
Happy to help. Justin, any final thoughts from you?
Yes, I would just like to say that baseball forcing Joe West to address the audience as if he is a referee will be the thing that causes him to quit baseball. I do not think he will stand up and actually do that.
You're talking about microphones?
Yep,
Yeah, microphones and umpires having to address the crowd. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I made those comments with no context, but I feel like now that you know what I'm talking about. I think this is the thing that drives Joe West out of baseball. I don't think he would ever want to have to explain himself, certainly not to fans.
Yeah, that'd be a bummer, wouldn't it?
That'd
be rough. That'd be rough. We'd deal with it, but somehow.
I can't wait.
Well, listen, folks, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. Thank you to Justin. Thank you to Liz. Once again, follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Folks, check out the Patreon for Hittin' Season. We got lots of good stuff up there. New content from Justin and Chris Jones. They got a new podcast up there. If you haven't caught it yet, make sure you do that. You got to go to patreon.com/hittin'season and sign up on the $5 a month tier to take advantage of that. And don't forget, if you haven't left a 5-star rating at Apple Podcast for the Good Fight podcast feed, please go ahead and do that and leave a rating and a review. When you get a chance, helps the podcast grow tremendously. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.